Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointsTC.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
But first, as you've been hearing, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky last night landed in Dublin as he begins his first official visit to Dublin. While it may be his first official visit, it's not the first time in this country, having previously visited in 2017 with members of his Kvartal 95 production company to perform a show in Drogheda in the TLT Theatre. That was, of course, a time when he was still a comedian. Less than 10 years later, he's arriving as president of the now war-torn Ukraine, with efforts to strike a peace deal continuing. We'll talk about those efforts shortly. But first, our political correspondent, Sean Defoe, joins us to bring us through the plan for the day. Sean, good morning.
Morning, Pat.
So he has arrived. We don't know where he's staying, or do we?
No, don't know exactly where he's staying yet. Obviously, a lot of the logistics are quite a closely guarded secret, even in terms of his arrival last night. I mean, the DFA were initially given about a 7-hour window for when he might arrive in order to have that bit of security around Dublin Airport. In the end, it was about 11 o'clock. But no, staying somewhere in the Dublin region, though.
OK, now his itinerary for the day with his wife, Olena Zelenska, they will be doing what I suppose president and first ladies do on state visits.
Exactly. Yeah. Look, we say state visit because, as you mentioned, he obviously has been to Ireland before. He was in Ireland this year very briefly in Shannon when he met the Taoiseach for a brief stopover as they refueled on his way to that now very, very fateful White House meeting with Donald Trump. But in terms of the state visit, all the usual trappings that come with it, I suppose the first off is that courtesy call on President Catherine Connolly up in the park. I suppose the first big world leader that she is going to receive in her new role. And that's going to happen and will involve several road closures throughout the Phoenix Park through the morning and early afternoon if people are usually making their way along that direction. And then it's on to government buildings. He's going to meet the Taoiseach and the Taoiseach there, as well as the Foreign Affairs Minister Helen McEntee, to discuss, I suppose, where things are with Ireland and Ukraine. A number of memos before the cabinet this morning that we talk about in a bit, if you like. And then there will be a press conference planned between Micheál Martin and Volodymyr Zelensky before he then goes on to address for the second time a joint sitting of the Dáil and Shannon. He did it virtually back in 2022, I suppose, in those first few months of the war. And you played a little bit of clip there in the opener of Sean O'Farrell welcoming him in, this time in person for that joint sitting.
Now, we are bearing gifts as he arrives. We're going to make a further donation to help Ukraine with non-lethal aid.
That's right, yeah, and a couple of memos before the cabinet on that front. If you remember back at the very start of the war, Volodymyr Zelensky said he would only ever leave Ukraine if he was getting something out of it, of that, be that bullets or money. And that's obviously changed over time as the war has gone on and the real politic of the situation has changed. But Ireland definitely stumping up again today, €100 million in extra funds under a new Ireland-Ukraine plan that's due to last out until 2030, as well as a further €25 million. That is specifically for energy support of Ukraine, essentially, as they head into are in now the very bitter cold winter with Russia targeting its energy infrastructure. So that's going to be agreed. And then the other memo is Ireland wants to be part of a commission for reparations, effectively, that if we do get a ceasefire and some sort of a peace deal, that Europe wants to see Russia largely fund, either through, say, seized assets or other measures, the rebuilding of Ukraine. And there is intention to set up a commission around that, of which Ireland wants to be a founding member and a party member.
Now, this mission is happening against the background of talks going on in Moscow. We'll talk to Duncan Bullivant in a few moments about all of that. What about Ireland's role in any of that? I mean, as a neutral country, as Sean O'Farrell said, we are not politically neutral, we are militarily neutral. Is there any role that Ireland is expected to play in all of that process?
Look, there's the watching brief, I suppose, on peacekeeping. That's the one that a lot of people have had their mind turned towards, especially now that it looks as though the UNIFIL mission in Lebanon is going to be wound down over the coming years. And Ireland has a very long and proud service record when it comes to peacekeeping, and that fine detail about what kind of security guarantees are going to be there, what kind of a force might be in Ukraine afterwards, whether there would be any sort of force. Is that going to be NATO? You would think not, obviously, given the Russian objections to that. So would there be a role, for example, for a UN force to be based in Ukraine, and could Ireland play a part in that? That's something we're certainly watching. And then also just the political heft. I think the last few days in particular, with Zelensky meeting with Emmanuel Macron, having phone conversations with quite a few members of the coalition of the willing, including Keir Starmer, and now, of course, being in Dublin today, he is very much trying to gear up that European support. And Europe is also trying to get a lever back into these talks, having been largely sidelined by the US side. So there is still a very keen Irish interest. I think we've been one of the most supportive countries in Europe when it comes to Ukraine. There's obviously other side meetings that are going to happen involving members of the Ukrainian community with Vladimir Zelensky, and indeed possibly with other ministers, with regard to the treatment and the conditions and the ongoing future of Ukrainian citizens who are here in Ireland, be that their education, their housing or whatever else. So there are many more ties between Ireland and Ukraine now than there were even 3 years ago. So it's not like, even if, say, there was a deal tomorrow and there is a ceasefire and many Ukrainians could go back to living in Ukraine, I think that lots may choose to stay, and there will be ongoing ties that will be nourished.
It's interesting. I mean, we didn't know much about Ukrainians in Ireland back in 2017 when Zelensky brought his Kvartal 95 troop to perform in Drogheda. But the house was packed. There are rather more Ukrainians here now. What is it, 100,000 Ukrainians reckoned to be in Ireland?
In that region, yeah.
Yeah. So a huge Ukrainian population. And I think Vladimir Zelensky will be very conscious of that. Now, what about the opportunity for the Russians to attempt to embarrass the Irish security forces by some sort of escapade?
Yeah, look, that's been taken very seriously, especially with that Russian vessel that we've seen off the Irish coast in the last few weeks, and the security operation around Dublin is huge. The buildings, government buildings in Leinster House in particular, were closed off to everybody for large parts of yesterday while there were sweeps going on. Now, look, our security forces pale in comparison to the likes of Russia or even Ukraine, but it's fair to say the guards and the security forces here are taking every step to make sure there isn't that, because I don't think they think there is any sort of active threat here to Vladimir Zelensky's safety. But like that, it would be very on brand for them to try and cause some sort of an issue, some sort of an embarrassment to him. So very much high alerting around here today.
Very different to his last visit here, where he's after the performance in Drogheda. They went to places like the Guinness Hop Store. He admired the building of Áras an Uachtaráin from afar. He'll see it in rather more close-up today. Went to see the Cliffs of Moher, and basically he was greatly taken by Ireland. Interesting that the performance, although it was song and dance, it was political as well, because even at that stage, as a comedic commentator and a satirist, I suppose, he was commenting on the corruption in Ukraine and how that had to be sorted. And of course, sorted he attempted to do when he became president. Anyway, Sean, you have a busy day. You are not accessing Leinster House in the usual way.
No, we're not. So I'm currently attempting to make my way to a sort of security point. And they had great difficulty, in fact, for finding somewhere to act as sort of a media hub and security centre, because, of course, everywhere in town is booked up for Christmas, various functions that are going on. So we're all trying to make our way out there to be security screened, to then be put on a bus to government buildings. And once you're in, it's always funny the way they do things. You're in a very secure media bubble, and if you leave that bubble, you're persona non grata, you're not getting back in it. But to the degree where we're being bussed to government buildings on Merrion Street, and then after that being bussed from Merrion Street to the 5 or so minute brisk walk to Leinster House on Kildare Street to make sure none of us get corrupted in the meantime. So it's all, and even at that, other staff who are meant to be working in Leinster House not allowed in today, and we're all quite restricted in our movements. So it's.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2 times the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger. Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8-6-25 and 1-5-26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at Rubrik.com. That's Rubrik.com.
A slightly unusual and slightly cumbersome route around the town that also includes road closures and Christmas shopping, but we'll make it all work.
Needs must anyway for a man who's regarded as a modern-day hero globally, I would say. Sean, thank you very much for joining us. Sean Defoe, our political correspondent. Well, listening to all of that, Duncan Bullivan, the CEO of the Henderson Risk Group. Duncan, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
So it's an important day here, and Zelensky, he's used to visiting European capitals on whistle-stop tours, but still, it's important. He sees it as it important to recognise the huge populations of Ukrainians in these various countries, including Ireland. As I say, rather proportionately more in Ireland at 100,000, given our population of 5 million, than perhaps elsewhere. But anyway, meantime, Witkoff and Kushner go to Moscow to discuss in the early afternoon the alterations that have been inflicted upon Putin and Trump's peace plan.
Yes, I mean, the original 28-point plan that was dreamt up and drafted by Witkoff and his trusted sidekick, Kushner, back in the day, has now been whittled down to 19 points. Some of the issues that have been removed are, for example, an amnesty for war crimes and no limit to the size of the Ukrainian armed forces. It is a less robust document from Putin's point, and it remains to be seen whether Putin actually accepts it as it stands at the moment. But it does seem to be a more acceptable plan to the Ukrainians than the original 28-point plan, which was beyond the pale.
Now, the business of Europe throwing in 100 billion and 100 billion of the Russian money that is in escrow, I suppose, in Belgium, 100 billion of that goes in. And then the Americans take half the profits without putting a red cent in themselves. Is that still in the document? Because Kushner and Witkoff are all about money, as indeed is their boss, Trump.
We believe it is still in the document, and it is... It's a pretty extraordinary piece of chicanery. And of course, it would require agreement by the Europeans on that front. And I don't think they'll ever get it. It's a little bit over the top. But if it gets Putin to look at the document and to agree a process which sees maximum pain for Europe and maximum division between the Americans and the European NATO allies, then he'll be all for it.
Sometimes people put stuff into agreements like this knowing that it will be removed, but it's designed, if you like, internally in the document to be a concession that they know they're going to have to make.
Yes, often things are put in the original document because they are requested or they are the personal whim of an individual. And then in the face of realpolitik and actually whittling things down to an agreeable final text, they get removed. But this is a document that was drafted by, you know, very successful businessmen who have operated, you know, at the extreme end of wealth globally. But it doesn't necessarily mean that they're capable of drafting a document that bears any relation to international law or is going to be sustainable or acceptable within a wider European context or for that matter, the Ukrainian context. But it is a start. You know, Europe is weak in the face of a sort of a deregulated diplomatic process, which is sort of driven by vested interests and sort of gangster politics. But in the absence of any other serious attempt, it may be the best option. And I think it's important not to let perfection be the enemy of good. It is going to be messy at the end.
But, I mean, if you take the phrase security guarantee, there are two words there, security, that's important to Ukraine. But the guarantee, I mean, How solid is any American guarantee under this particular Trump regime? How solid could that be? I mean, he's whimsical, he's capricious, he can change his mind in, I was going to say 24 hours, in 10 minutes, this man. So what does a guarantee mean coming from the Trump regime?
Well, indeed. And also, what once the security guarantees are put in place, the first thing that the Russians are going to do is look to see how they can push the boundaries with those security guarantees. I mean, the ultimate security guarantee for Ukraine would be to become a NATO member. And that is anathema to the Russians. And I suspect that the Americans, the Trump team will not be pushing for it either. But I think that, you know, security guarantees have got to be sufficient that the Ukrainians, who, let's face it, understand issues of security better perhaps than any of us, it's something that they see as acceptable. Because as I've just said, anything that is put in writing, anything that is put in place will be challenged from day one by the Russians, practically, politically and diplomatically. They'll push the boundaries.
But the Ukrainians have been burnt. I mean, Budapest means nothing. Minsk means nothing. All of the guarantees offered to them before by, indeed, NATO, when they handed over their nukes to the Russians, they turned out to be meaningless.
No, and I think Ukraine is ultimately going to have to be master of its own security and its own protection. And it has to be in a situation where, let's just say, for example, if there is a ceasefire put in place sometime before Christmas or sometime before Orthodox Christmas, you know, in our new year, which would be a great achievement, that they need to know that they can then restructure and rebuild to a point where it's still not in Russia's best interest to have another go at Ukraine. And that I think is a real prospect. The Ukrainians do not believe for one moment that Russia has given up on its original war aims, which is to remove the democratic leadership of Ukraine and to take more land and more territory, particularly the industrial value of the Donbass, rich in coal, natural gas and other minerals. So I think at the end of the day, Ukraine is going to have to be in control of its own security, backed up by reliable allies. And I think when you look at reliable allies, there have been a handful of European countries who have stood alongside Ukraine, but whose own armed forces and resources are deeply stretched as a result of everything they've put into Ukraine, and have shown no real signs of ramping up their industrial base to replace that equipment or even face the growing threat from Russia.
Now, what of the Russian claim that they have captured what they call the strategic town of Pokrovsk? I mean, what was there left to capture? How many ordinary Ukrainian civilians were living there, living a normal life? Or was it one of those empty achievements, I suppose? You capture rubble.
Well, it's not the first time the Russians have claimed to have captured Pokrovsk. And it probably won't be the last. And of course, it is largely a shell of its former self. And I think that's been quite generous in its description. Very few civilians left, although some, not entirely evacuated. Those that have remained are now considering their future, and I don't think they want to live under Russian occupation. So there has been an exodus. There is no doubt that if Russia were to, as they have claimed, control Pokrovsk, it would be a significant propaganda coup for Putin, and it might give him the boost he needs to be seen to be going into these negotiations as an equal partner, not as the defeated, and you know, with a bit of a spring in his step. But it has cost the Russians over 1,000 Russian soldiers killed in November alone this year to make the gains that they have made in Pokrovsk, which is simply not sustainable. And so the Ukrainians have taken an incredible penalty, have issued an incredible punishment to the Russians for this Pyrrhic victory. Mm. But of course, Pokrovsk is important. It's a logistics hub, and it's an important part of the Kramatorsk defense strategy, which is this sort of fortified line behind which the Ukrainians can operate, and which deters and deflects Russian attack, and has been very successful.
Now, to what extent externally and internally are the Russians winning a propaganda war? I mean, we know internally they control media, so whatever the Kremlin says is to be said on the airwaves or I presume even in social media, that's the narrative that, that penetrates. But externally, are they conveying maybe more of a victorious strategy than perhaps their military success justifies?
I mean, I don't think they're controlling the narrative, which they would love to do, because I think the narrative is the generally accepted narrative in the West, in Europe, for example, is that Russia is the aggressor. But let me just put things in, into perspective. I do a lot of business in other parts of the world, particularly in Africa. And I've spoken to serious African bankers and serious African business people who genuinely look at this situation through a completely different lens. And that is that somehow, again, Russia was provoked into doing this and oh, there's no smoke without fire. And the Ukrainians probably shouldn't have you know, been too close to NATO, and it's NATO's fault. That still exists. And that exists in a very large proportion of what we now refer to as the global South. So we've got to be really careful to believe that the Western European view of Russia is the rest of the world, because it simply isn't. And I think where Russia is really starting to achieve some traction, it's dividing the Americans from their European NATO allies. That's their primary objective now at this point. And we have to be very, very careful about that.
Of course, we always come back to how Putin has done this. Is Trump effectively the Manchurian candidate? Is he completely compromised? And therefore, no matter what is suggested by Europe, that Trump will do Putin's bidding at the end of the day.
Well, there are those who say that, and you know, I've never seen any evidence for it. I'm not convinced, but I think it's a murky old game, and it's a messy old world, and none of us really enjoy the idea that it's business people that are leading on these issues. We would rather see statesmen coming forward, making gains for decency and humanity, but I'm afraid there aren't any statesmen in the world at the moment. So we've got what we've got, and let's just hope that it can bring some sort of peace, even though it may be imperfect and somewhat temporary.
Duncan Bullivant, CEO of the Henderson Risk Group. Duncan, thank you very much for joining.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.